Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, a hot record, a fire disc. And today, we will be shadowboxing our way back to 1995 to revisit Liquid Swords, the sophomore album by the genius, a.k.a. the GZA, of the Wu-Tang Clan.
I got your back, but you best to watch your front. Cause if the niggas in front, then you doing stunts. I got your back, but you best to watch your front. Cause if the niggas in front, then you doing stunts. I was always taught by dudes and dopes, but dudes are dick.
If you had a government name like Gary Grice, it's no surprise that your future nom de plumes would also have a thang for G's. In 1991, Grice landed in the rap world as the genius, armed with an authoritative baritone and vocabulary thick enough to fill a dictionary. Alas, his then label mismanaged that debut, and in another lifetime, perhaps the genius would have joined the long parade of no-hit wonders. However, the genius came into the game alongside childhood friends, including one Robert Diggs, then known as Prince Rakim, who himself was frustrated with the record industry. They had talent, they had vision, they had crew, or better said, they had clan, as the two took their love of 70s kung fu flicks and turned it into an artistic identity. Prince Rakim became the RZA, the genius became the GZA, and along with a squad of Staten Island misfits, they assembled the Wu-Tang Clan in 1993, inviting listeners into their 36 chambers, and hip-hop would never be the same again. The GZA wasn't just a member of the Wu, he was its lyrical captain, runner of the anchor leg, on the clan's Biggest Posse Cuts, and on Liquid Swords, he flexed his newly earned creative freedom over a dozen sides of Shaolin Soul. Wu fans will endlessly argue over who had the best solo album in 1995. Was it Old Dirty Bastards, Off Kilter, Return to the 36 Chambers? Was it Ray and Ghost's epic Only Built for Cuban Links? Sentimentally, it's hard not to root for Liquid Swords, though. The GZA's second chance to make a first impression alongside his lifelong friend, the abbot and the master, breaking down your pendulum.
My lifestyle was so far from well. Could have wrote a book with a title, age 12 and going through hell. Then I realized the plan. I'm trapped in a deadly video game with just one man. So I don't only watch my back, I watch in front. Cause it's the niggas in front.
Liquid Swords was the album pick of our guest today, David Ma. David Ma's been in the game for years. It made him an animal. It's rules to the He's written several manuals. He's an OG in music journalism, having contributed to Accelerator, Rolling Stone, The Guardian, Pitchfork, The Source, OK Player, and more. He co-hosts Dad Bod Rap Pod, try to say that fast, straight out of San Jose, built on deep dives into hip-hop's best offerings, best stories, best verses. In terms of his pen game, he's nice with it. Good at getting prolific figures to talk about their journey with him. For context, check his work with Curtis Blow, Guru, and Chuck D, and also MF Doom. If at this point you're wondering who those people are, know that Oliver and I will be lifting you up in fervent prayer. But but stay connected to David Ma. We are thrilled to have David Ma join us to wax poetic about his heat rock Liquid Swords. David, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you so much for having me on the program, guys. Really glad to be here.
Dave, you gave us a few options of album picks, but you emphasized you really, really wanted to talk about Liquid Swords. Why is that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those albums that sort of spine tingling right from the top. You know, in the same way that David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust starts off with 5 years, or how Velvet Underground's Andy Warhol starts off with Sunday Morning, or how Low End Theory kicks off with Excursions. It's one of those first tracks where you know you're in for something special, but there's a feeling of uneasiness. So, you know, when the album kicks off and he's like, "When I was little, my father was famous," and that dialogue sample kicks in, you right away are just intrigued, and it just struck me immediately.
When I was little, my father was famous. He was the greatest samurai in the empire, and he was the shogun's decapitator. He cut off the heads of 131 lords. It was a bad time for the empire.
some of what we ask our guests when they come in, because we are interested in how you came to acquire the album that you chose. Mm-hmm. So can you remember the moment that you got Liquid Swords, where you got it, how you got it?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I was in high school, and this was back in the time, I don't know if you guys remember The Warehouse.
Yeah.
So you could go to The Warehouse. You could go there and buy anything you want, and then if you don't like it, turn it right back for store credit. It was one of those where I used my revolving store credit, you know, umpteenth times, and came back with Liquid Swords and certainly kept it right away. And, you know, it was a time when the mystique hadn't been completely punctured yet. So it was like, who are these Wu-Tang guys? Everything is fire. Everything's mind-blowing. And then here comes GZA, you know, the aforementioned guy who anchors all the posse cuts. It's like he has his own solo album. And this is on the heels of, like, you know, Tikal had just been out already. So I was just super excited. And I mean, it completely delivered.
We talked a little bit about this during our episode with Open Mike Eagle about Return to the 36 Chambers by Old Dirty Bastard. But this is only the second time we've really gotten into the Wu. And I'm wondering if we could just briefly talk a little bit about what it was like hearing the Wu come in into hip hop, beginning with Enter the 36 Chambers. And then certainly that year of 1995 was incredibly busy in terms of, you had, as I mentioned during my intro, Old Dirty's album came out then. You had Raekwon with Ghostface Killah. Tikal had just come out in late 1994. So this was really, I think, at the high point of the Wu just taking over the proverbial game. And what, to you, Dave, what were the similarities and differences you heard with what hip-hop sounded like pre-Wu versus post-Wu?
Well, I mean, certainly with pre-Wu, it was, I think it was just a little bit more sunny, right? And then, like, sort of around the time when Black Moon's album came out, you know, you have, like, you have the posse cuts, you have, like, you have the hooks where it sounds like there's 50 guys in a room yelling the hook at the same time. And it was one of those where it's like, what's going on? There's a macabre sort of sound that's washing over everything. And, you know, obviously the Mobb Deeps of the world and stuff like that sort of just centered everything for me. So all of a sudden here comes Wu-Tang, and they're, you know, they're hurling towards you with their liquid swords and stuff. And it was completely mind-blowing, to be frank.
And Morgan, you had said, I think, during that same episode with Open Mic about ODB, that GZA is really the favorite, your favorite of the Wu members.
He is.
Yeah. So what was this album like for you hearing it?
I was so sprung and ready for him to break out on his own, although for whatever reason, I thought this would be much later. I thought that Method Man was going to get all the love because he was more charismatic. Mm-hmm. Tikal was gigantic. But I fell in love with GZA on Seventh Chamber Part 2 of Into the Wu. Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought up him anchoring, because I thought he was a great closer.
Yeah.
To come after the verse that was Old Dirty Bastards on that song, which is big and animated.
Dirty clan of terrorists coming at your ass like a sorceress, shooting at piss. Niggas be getting on my fucking nerves. Ron said we kicking, made me wanna kick their fucking ass to the curb. We got monkey breath like the whole specialist.
And as soon as he went with, "My clan is thick like plaster," I was like, okay, here we go, bust your slasher. Okay. And that he ended that verse with a reference to Lucky Charms, I was like, this is my dude right here. I'm all about GZA.
I came down with back tracks that come blind and in a lot, like getting smashed by center block. Bow, now it's all over. Niggas seeing pink hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, and green clovers.
What I like about him is, and I've said this before, is that what Wu-Tang did for me as a listener, and I was in love with hip-hop at this point too, was they introduced a world that I knew nothing about.
Right, right.
I didn't really watch martial arts or kung fu films, so I wasn't really up on that game. I really didn't know about Staten Island. I didn't know where Shaolin was, and they introduced me to this world. And they animated this world with certain clips. And there was sort of a, I never was good in science. And so I was fascinated with the Wu-Tang because I thought they were very scientific. I thought their references were about physics and science. And GZA to me was the genius of them all. That he, when he came on a track, He just slid in like an elder statesman. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about scholars, and I have a preference for quiet scholars who wait till everybody said their thing and they drop something on you and you're like, well, damn. Yeah. And that's what Jizza was like for me. He was like, well, damn. I don't know, and that's a question for either one of you guys, if RZA was the person that decided the order that, you know, basic people came in. I don't know if how he decided to put Jizza at the end all the time, mm-hmm. but it was so smart to me because he was a great closer.
Right.
He was the less animated of, to me, of the group.
And Dave, you interviewed Jizza about this very album. And so was this something that came up in your conversation in terms of how did the order of the MCs go? And I'm also curious if I can append a similar question to that. Given that I would have thought that after Enter the 36 Chambers blew up, Jizza being kind of, you know, the head, the Voltron head,
yeah,
right, as
yeah.
the man once described him as, right.
yeah.
it would have made more sense to me that Jizza would have had, his solo album should have come first, and then whoever else, you know, Meth, Ray, ODB, and while, right. you know, fourth in line, and, you know, Ghostface was still after that, it's... I don't know if the order really matters that much, but it always surprised me that Jizza's album, his solo album, didn't come sooner compared to some of the other folks.
I got really lucky and got a chance to interview him, and it was one of those times where he had availability for a little press window, I think, to work on to talk about the album that he did with DJ Muggs. And it was one of those times where it was like, "Hi, Jizza, you know, thank you for your time. We love the new album, but let's talk about Liquid Swords," you know. And it was one of those where you're kind of afraid that the artist doesn't want to break everything down, but he was very gracious with his time.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And the whole sequencing thing, it sounded as if the blueprint was already there. I mean, just as we probably read in all the Wu-Tang books and stuff, I mean, RZA was the mastermind. He knew who he wanted on first and who he wanted on second and who to play shortstop, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And Jizza was so foundational. I mean, on the album, he raps like he's on a grid. Everything's just sort of perfectly measured.
Mm.
And on Words from the Genius, I mean, there are moments where he's rippity-rapping a little bit, you know? But on this, I mean, all that's just jettisoned. And everything he says, I mean... It's just so vivid, you know, and the tone of the production, I mean, certainly matched the lyrical imagery like right. to a T.
And do you have an idea of, so you think RZA is the one who chose which artists got to go, whose albums came in what order?
Yes, 100%. I think that was a master. He was the mastermind behind that. And I think just from reading, you know, some journalism stuff, he wanted Meth to go first because, you know, it seemed like he had the most mainstream appeal.
Yeah.
And Method Man had been a big single.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, you know, if you hear 36 Chambers, to the sort of, not the layman, but someone who's not super into rap music, I think Method Man's voice and just the bounce and the presence that he carries certainly stands out. So I can see why they picked that order.
And I was just going to say, to Oliver's point, he did have crossover appeal because Meth was big with the girls.
Mm.
I just remember that being in college, and I was in college when this album came out, but Meth was big with the girls on the strength of some of his side stuff, Ice Cream.
Rap niggas get all up in your guts. French vanilla, butter, pecan, chocolate deluxe. Even caramel sundaes is getting touched and scooped in my ice cream truck. Who says it up? Yo, honey dip, summertime, fine jerry dripping. Send you a pickings with a bunch of chickens, how you clicking?
Girls, everybody was bumping that.
Well, the
you
joint
know.
With Mary.
A joint with Mary.
Yeah.
So right. he had that breakout appeal, period. He had the breakout appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Shorty, I'm there for you anytime you need me. For real, girl, it's me in your world. Believe me, nothing make a man feel better than a woman. Queen with a crown, that be down for whatever.
And Dave, to come back to your earlier point that you mentioned around the transition or the transformation of Genius to Jizza, which I think is still really remarkable because even though there's really only at most, what, 2-3 years between Words from a Genius to Enter the 36 Chambers, but in both vocal sound and style, and of course, as you pointed out, in musical sound and style, those 3 years, it's like night and day. In fact, if we can just spin back to one of the singles from that Words from a Genius album from 91, this is Genius with some New Jack Swing, Come Do Me.
I said, lovely, I be the genius, and how you doing? I'm on the chase, and you're the one that I'm pursuing. She said, it's a pleasure, genius, I'm doing kind of fine, but what's on your mind? I said.
And then you just fast forward a few years, and then you get GZA on Swordsman and just compare and contrast.
I'm not caught up in politics. I'm no black activist on a so-called scholar's dick. I come through with the witch math and versatile freestyle.
I mean, that's wild. That is a wild shift.
Yeah. Yeah, that first song is what we call Get On. We call it Get On Party of One. Everyone has that one thing that they put out to get on, be it a film or your first little piece that you write. Everyone has one thing, but it's just so weird to hear him on some New Jack. And I like New Jack. I've taken some heat about my love for it.
Only from me, Morgan.
I've taken heat about that thing, but I have to say, even with my love for New Jack, that sounded crazy compared to Second Thing.
Right.
A question that I have for you, you know, one thing about the Wu-Tang, they had names for themselves. They had the genius. They had Raekwon the chef. GZA is the genius, but what else is he? If you had to throw one term at him, what adjective, what else is GZA besides the genius?
I think in terms of Wu-Tang, he's the storyteller. I mean, tracks like Gold, I think, are one of the most, it's one of the best examples of storytelling rap ever. It's just so vivid. And it's one of those where sort of like, when you just finish a film, you want to kind of go back. I mean, with this, you want to hit rewind right away and listen to that first verse and see where the narrative turns in the second part of the song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just so much, and I think that Ghostface is also one of the best storytellers. But at least at this juncture, when the albums were coming out, I thought GZA was just painting pictures vividly.
I had to connect to cross seals to catch more mills than whole bitches got birth control pills. I'm in the park setting up a deal over blunt fire. Bum nigga sleeping on the bench, they had him wired. Peep my convo, the address of my condo, and how I change a nigga named John Doe. And while he set up camp, he got.
I think also one of the things that really distinguishes GZA is just the quality of his voice. And I think if we're talking about the Wu, all right, Meth is number one. I mean, just has the best voice. RZA certainly has one of the most distinctive voices, but I would have to give GZA the number two spot in terms of best voice in the crew. And I think, you know, I think I described it a little bit earlier. There's kind of this authoritativeness to it. Morgan, you were asking, like, what other adjectives, what other nouns, titles can you give to the GZA besides genius? And, you know, for some reason, the first thing that popped into my mind is like the judge, because it's like when he speaks, there's a kind of a finality to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly one of the things that really all the Wu members, most of them had really, really distinctive voices. But just the sheer pleasure of listening to the GZA's voice, I think, is a big part of his appeal as well.
Right. 100%. And I feel like, you know, even his later albums, for some reason, the way his voice was captured doesn't sound as authoritative as it does on this. Like, there's a certain magic to the actual recording of this and how his voice sounds. I don't know if he was, you know, getting off of a cold on some of his later albums or whatever, but the voice just sounds so different. And on this, it's like, wow, like, captured magic, you know? Mm-hmm.
This might get us into a bit of a fight here, but I'm wondering, where does Liquid Swords rank amongst the Wu-Tang solo albums? Is this your favorite of the solo joints, Dave?
For me, it certainly is. And it's one that, you know, like I said, due to the sort of depth of the storytelling and just the way the lyrics marry with the atmosphere of the beats, it's certainly my favorite. I know that there's always sort of this debate between Liquid Swords or Cuban Lynx. And, you know, I find myself thinking Cuban Lynx has amazing moments, but Liquid Swords, just as a whole, I think it's hard to top. What about for you guys?
I'm definitely Cuban Lynx if we're talking about the 95 albums. Though I would say if we're talking about just in the 90s in general, I think Supreme Clientele was the one that got the most burn from me, even though it's a sophomore album. But of course, Liquid Swords is a sophomore album. But if we're counting like that first wave of post Enter the 36 Chambers albums, then I do think it comes down to, for me at least, it's Only Built for Cuban Lynx. And then I think Liquid Swords and Return to the 36 and Iron Man, all of them have high, for me, high points and low points, but makes it very hard to choose between. And maybe it's just recency bias, but listening to Liquid Swords again, even though on some of the, I would say, weaker songs, I really don't care for, but the songs I like, I really, really like. So it is kind of tough to choose in that way, even though I think, you know, given the choice, like on a Desert Island Disc, challenge, I would probably take Old Ain't Built personally for me, because that Purple Tape was
fire.
Right.
I don't even know. I'm scared to even answer this question right now. So I'm so torn. If you had asked me, and this comes a lot, it's when you ask me. If you had asked me around this time, if you had asked me years ago, I would have said Cuban Links, because Cuban Links for me is a bouncer.
Yeah.
I think the older that I've gotten, Liquid Swords to me is more heady. It's the most that I'm a music supervisor now, so it's the most that is. It's the one that's the most cinematic, the one that's the most heady, the most that now that my old ass is like turn the music down. Music is too loud, right? So Liquid Swords appeals to me because it's turned down. Cuban Links is turned up, and Jizz is my favorite. So I have to be the spoiler here and say Liquid Swords. Mm. Although I think Cuban Links is a bouncer. This one is, to me, appeals to my dramatic, cinematic side and the old auntie that wants you to turn your music down. That's me all day.
You know what's interesting, though, is the one album that none of us mentioned, really, is Tikal. Even though everyone knows, like, Meth was the most charismatic, he had the hit with Method Man, the single, and yet Tikal, I feel like, oftentimes gets forgotten and for reasons that I'm not entirely sure why, but it's never like at the top of my list when I think of like great Wu-Tang solo albums. Yeah, Tikal never comes up.
And that's a trip because I haven't mentioned that album. And sometimes when I think about it, I feel like I prefer Meth on those features.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, even Meth's feature on Liquid Swords is just incredible. I mean, Meth, I think, was on fire. And that verse sort of reminds me of the track he did with Biggie.
Oh, F the World. Or the what?
It's real, 94, rugged raw, kicking on your goddamn doors.
Like this.
Fuck the world, don't ask me for shit. Yeah. Everything you get, you got to work hard for it.
Honey, shake your hips.
You don't stop.
And I think that's one of the greatest rap duets of all time.
No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think with Method, I mean, maybe, and I don't know if this is completely fair, but maybe he lacks a little bit of subtlety. You know what I mean? He's just so over the top great and over the top charismatic. Whereas like with the Cuban Links or even with like a Ghostface album, you'll come back and pick up lines that you might have missed. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas Meth just puts it on a platter perfectly right away.
One of the things I really liked reading in your interview with Jizza about Liquid Swords was him saying that he actually that Jizza likes just doing Meth's verse from Shadow Boxing because he had so much respect for that.
I break it down to the bone gristle. Hills peaking, scud missile, heat seeking. Johnny Blazing, nightmares like Wes Craven. Niggas gunning, my third eye seen it coming before it happened. You know about them fucking statin kids, they smashing everything, huh? In any shape, form, or fashion. Now everybody talking about they blasting.
Is you bust- Ooh-wee. Woo! Wow.
In fuego.
And I mean, you know, he just came with that, you know, my steez. I mean, this is my favorite song on the album. It's just a banger. And even though I think Meth's verse was fire, I think that Jizza did well for the middle. He didn't anchor this one, he came right in the middle and has one of my favorite lines on here that says,
most rap niggas came loud but unheard. Once I pulled out, ground them off to the nearest third. Check these non-visual niggas with tapes in the port.
For somebody that's not good in math, this was a revelation. I was like, this is incredible, short but sweet.
See?
And I think that everybody talks about Meth's verse, which is hands down fire. But I like what Jizza had to say on here. Short, sweet, and in the middle and to the point.
See, it's all these 5%er guys. Of course, they understand today's mathematics. So they got their fractions down. They got their fractions down.
I found it to be really interesting because during that interview, I think Jizza told me that that track was originally a Method Man track.
Oh.
And RZA had looped it up and queued it up for Method. And then Jizza was like, yo, what is this? Let me hop on. And it sort of just morphed into being the 11th track or whatever on Liquid Swords.
This speaks to a point that just occurred to me too, is at least in this moment, right? So post Enter the 36 through the rest of the 90s, up through Wu-Tang Forever, even though all of these guys were masters of braggadocio, I think their relationship to each other is, you really don't get the sense that they're ego tripping. Like, they're happy to share, like, give out as many features on each of their solo albums to their fellow Wu members as they want. And maybe this was also just part of RZA's genius, is to make sure that the wealth got distributed. But you never felt like, you know, meth was either doing GZA a favor or vice versa, which is sort of like, I'm just going to give you this song, just be nice to you, but really I'm the man. Like within the Klan, it felt very egoless, which is a striking thing to say considering that these guys were the masters of bragging.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. I mean, with Liquid Swords, and I kind of feel this way, like I made this comparison before, where I feel like it was his, GZA's Citizen Kane, or it was his introducing, where it just took every experience and every fiber of his being to sort of put this forth, and everything seemed insurmountable afterwards, you know what I mean? And so while there was sort of a lack of ego, it was also like, but I'm going to put my best shit forward.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Dave Ma on Liquid Swords after a brief word from a couple great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Listen, we already know that you love genre movies, film craft, and female filmmakers. So, if you love all those things, then by transitive property, you love my podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Hi, I'm film critic April Wolf. Every week, I have a conversation with a different female filmmaker about their favorite genre film. Each episode covers the filmmaking process, working in the film industry, and just like general geeking out about awesome movies. I've had such great guests like the Big Sick writer Emily Gordon.
To me, indie movies as of late have come to be a catch-all term for a movie that kind of defies genre.
Billy Madison and Half-Baked director Tamara Davis.
When a comedian comes and enters onto my set, they're just there to be funny, and we're all ready and waiting for them to be funny.
Horror industry veteran and actor Barbara Crampton.
That's where real drama lies for me. What's between you and I speaking right now? Where are we meeting? And what's the energy that we create between us?
And so many others. So check out Switchblade Sisters every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here on Heat Rocks talking about the GZA's 1995 album Liquid Swords with our guest music journalist Dave Ma.
A question that I had for you, because I don't remember, and it's been bugging me since I started prepping for this chat. Do you remember, either one of you, do you remember how many mics Liquid Swords got on the Source?
I don't remember off the top, but I'm going to hazard a guess and say it was not five, because I think right. In the mid-90s, the Source was really, really tight with those five mics. Like, they'll give out four and a half, relatively easy, but I think not fives, even though later editorial regimes, years later, went back and retroactively started given fives.
Oh, out really?
To kind of make up for the fact that maybe we're holding our standards a little too high, but I'm pretty sure Liquid Swords did not get five. I'm not even sure that Enter the 36 Chambers got five. I mean, that was how hard it was to get five mics back then. Oh, sorry. Our producer is flashing four fingers up. So yeah, it got four.
It got four. Okay.
Which I think, I think it's kind of fair. I don't think this is a five micer.
Really? Okay.
But that's just me. And I just looked up, you know, this is on Wikipedia, so take this with a slight grain of salt. Low End Theory, five. Illmatic, five. Life After Death, five.
Aquemini,
five. But no Wu album. There's not a single Wu album on this list that got five mics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, see, this is retroactively. So there's a list of albums that originally received 4.5 and was later re-rated. And that does include The Chronic. So that means The Chronic originally didn't get five. Enter the 36 did not get five. Ready to Die did not get five originally. Only Built for Cuban Links did not get five originally. The Infamous by Mobb Deep did not get five originally. So yeah, the Source was tight. The Source was really, really, really tight with those five micers, man. They were just not... They were not just throwing that shit out like candy.
Wow, The Chronic didn't get five?
Nah. Mm-hmm. That's because it was all East Coast.
Yeah, regional bias. I was just about to say. I see it all.
But you know what? I guess the Source also wasn't his motherfucking boy.
Anyway, that'll do it.
But I think this does speak to something, which is that a five mic, in the way that I always processed it back then, and you can argue over what that should symbolize by today's standards, but by giving something a five mic, you're saying it's an instant classic, which to me always felt like a contradiction in terms, because how can you know something's a classic until there's a passage of time?
Yeah.
And so I think that their editorial policy then was, it has to be something in which there is no doubt in anybody's mind this thing is going to be a future classic. And I think by that token, it's easy to look back in hindsight and say, of course The Chronic was five. Of course 36 Chambers was, because we can see what the influence of those things were after. But I think when Dre first put out The Chronic, imagine you were just listening to it the very first time. Like, you don't have the benefit of knowing what happened for the next 5 years after it. I don't know if you would listen to The Chronic and think, oh yeah, this is an instant classic. This is going to be one of the most influential albums in the history of hip hop.
Right.
You would think this is pretty good. Right. Like, it's nice to see that Dre has a career post NWA.
And
this Snoop Cat sounds pretty good. I don't know about RBX, but like, I don't know if you would have said that this is absolutely five.
I agree with that. And I'm L.A. tried and true, but I agree with that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was thinking about how I came to GZA and the introduction to the rest of the Wu-Tang, it made me think of Stranded on Death Row. Mm-hmm. And I thought, God, and the Wu-Tang version was so much better.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was meeting a few distinct personalities, whereas the Stranded on Death Row, I was like, okay, so we got Bushwick Bill, we got Lady of Rage.
Wait, Bushwick Bill was on Stranded?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wasn't he? Who starts out the rap like, yes, it is I, times three, it is we. I thought that was Bushwick Bill, yo.
Yes, it is I, says me, and all who agree are more than three, because they're we. Yes.
Yo, I'm in the house now for sure, because I want to talk about the hearts of men. Who knows what evil lurks within them?
Yeah, the intro to the Stranded on Death Row is Bushwick Bill.
Wow. See, today I learned something. Let's bring this back to the GZA, though.
Okay.
Because if there's something that's going to give this album some deductions, and this is, I'm just saying, this is me speaking. I'm not speaking for Morgan. I'm not speaking for Dave. Just for me. The skits are too long. The fact that it begins with, and I timed this because it was so freaking long. The album begins with 80 seconds from, was it Shogun Assassin? And why does it need to be that long? And here's the general rule to artists. This is the rule. If you're going to do a skit like that, it's got to be at the back end of the song so you can skip over it and then get to the beginning of the new song. But I don't want to have to like put on the song I like and then sit through 30 seconds of VHS taped Kung Fu dialogue.
But I mean, you said the intro to that was 80 seconds. So do you have a cutoff, a time cutoff that you think intros should be?
I don't care how long it is. If what he had done was, if that had just been an intro cut by itself so I could just skip it and just go straight into Liquid Swords, I would have much preferred that instead of listening to. I felt the same way about some of the movie dialogue that was used even on Raekwon's album or Enter the 36 Chambers. Well, actually, Enter the 36, they tend to be very short. So I could roll with that.
Right.
Raekwon's album was the first one I remember where they're running like a minute long dialogue off of John Woo films. And having seen those movies and knowing what the dubbing is like, I'm like, it's cool that you're doing this, but the first time, like when I'm listening to this on heavy rotation the 15th time, I do not need that dialogue there. I just want to get to the goddamn song.
No.
And this album in particular,
I agree.
I think was kind of flagrant with its use of movie dialogue.
As a music supervisor, I have to say I love it.
I definitely feel you. I mean, I think a good skit works when it doesn't feel long. You know what I mean? But, you know, for this one, especially when it first came out, and to like go back and find out that these were from the Shogun Assassin series, were just amazing. And I do agree that it is long at the start, but I think it just centered the whole thing like perfectly. It just set the mood for the whole album. And it could be about 20 seconds shorter, but I do love that dialogue sample, though.
They were supposed to kill my father, but they didn't. That was the night everything changed.
Sometimes we gotta fasten back. See, niggas don't know where this shit started. Y'all know where it came from.
Speaking of samples, just want to name check a few that were featured on this album, if I could. Of course, with Liquid Swords, we've got Groovin', Willie Mitchell.
black belts that attack. The white bones like cyclones or typhoons. I represent from midnight to high noon. I don't waste ink, nigga, I think I drop megaton bombs more fast than you blink.
Duel of the Iron Mike, there are a few. Living in the World Today. We also have In the Hole, The Barquets, David Porter, I'm Afraid the Masquerade is Over. On Gold, we have Aries, Cannonball Adderley, and the Adderley Sextets.
This is Aries Aram, ruled by the planet Mars, god of war.
Don't anybody be more flinging. Over here, I'm eternal, and that's my world to get blasted. Anything from 220 to 140, that's mine. Y'all niggas step the fuck off. Y'all niggas ain't crazy for real. Yo, the things ain't coming fast enough.
And of course, the interpolation of Rocket Love, Stevie Wonder, right. Shadow Boxing. We've got that beautiful, beautiful, very short. But one of the things that made that so funky with for me was the Ann Peebles' Troubles, Heartaches and Sadness. Speaking of favorites, what track for you is the fire track on here?
Ooh, I mentioned this earlier, but I'm just gonna go back to it. I think Gold is my favorite track.
Mm. Okay,
I mean, you know, when they're mentioning, you know, being buried with all that money in her womb, in her tomb, like when he's talking about his mother. And again, I just think that's one of the greatest examples of storytelling. It's just so vivid. He goes really quickly between images and sort of scenes from the movie, if you will. And I really think the way his voice is captured on that as well is just so perfect.
The plan was to expand, catch seven figures, release triggers, and live large and bigger than my nigga who promised his mom's a mansion with mad room. She died and he still put $100,000 in the tomb. Open wounds, he hid behind closed doors and still organizes crime and drug wars. Things ain't
I think it's as good, as vivid as anything like Slick Rick has ever done. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Except for it's about 10 years removed and grimier, and you know he's deep down in the back streets, you know, like it's just so dark. I love it.
So Morgan, your fire track was Shadow Boxing. Dave's fire track is Gold. My fire track, and I'm actually surprised neither of you mentioned this, Fourth Chamber, especially.
Ooh.
With that, I don't know, is that a synthesizer, is it a guitar, what is that like squealy noise that opens the song with?
That thing is fire.
What is that? What is that sound? Dave, do you know?
I have no idea, but I'm just picturing RZA conducting a seance, you know, somewhere. It's just ridiculous. And then, I mean, and then that verse with, you know, Ghostface talking about Judas and all that. It's so, it has such an epic feel.
Oh, why'd they plot while Jesus slept?
Ooh-wee. So many bars off this.
And one of my favorite lines on there, which is, Scar trying to figure who invented this unprecedented opium scented dark tinted. Come on, fool.
Oh, come
on. Get out of here.
Let's get into this. Favorite moments on the album, which I think might come down. It could be musical moments, but I have a sneaking suspicion people's favorite moments are going to be lyrical moments. And if I can start this off,
right.
I mean, really, I could say like every other line on Labels was a favorite moment, because when that song first came out and people were listening to it, I mean, there were so many bars on there, and just the cleverness and working in the label name. So it was really tough for me to limit this. I think the one that I kind of riffed on for my intro about A&M, the Abbot and the Master, you know, Breaking Down Your Pendulum, that's a high point. But another favorite, and this comes around maybe about a minute in, which is from East West to Atco, I bring it to a next plateau, but I keep it fat, yo. Like, I love that.
Crazy.
Slang is Wu-Tang, with the unpredictable talent, match, dang. I'm death throwing them, see what Mike tables. The epic is out of Rush Associated Labels. From East West to Atco, I bring it to a next plateau, but I keep it fat though. Yo, I'm hitting batters up with the wild pitch style. I even showing uptown MCA style. Who thought he saw me on 4th and Broad?
Woo!
I mean, I think Rush Associated Labels is also really clever, given the name of the label is Rush Associated Labels, like that. But turning Rush right. into like a verb, like this whole song is just favorite moments everywhere.
I mean, let's talk about all the labels that he dropped in here: Jive, MCA, Def Jam, Death Row, Atco, Tommy Boy, Mercury, Columbia. He threw in Virgin. Yeah. He snuck in there. Cold Chillin', right. Interscope, Geffen, Motown, RCA, and Tough City.
First Priority, which was not a label that a lot of people know unless you were a deep like MC Light fan from early on. So you know, he really did his homework and kind of running through, you know, all the key big, both the major labels, but a lot of minor hip hop labels also got the shine on there.
Can either one of you guys tell us what was going on with him and the label situation? How did we get to this song?
Well, I mean, I'm not a super expert, but I do know that they had a lot of issues at Cold Chillin'. And eventually, I did an interview with Master Ace, who told me a story about how when they found out, everyone on the roster found out that they were let go through like a little simple memo. And I think a lot of people felt dissed, having been with them since the start. And so when you hear labels, you know, he's talking about these Cold Chillin' motherfuckers and all that. And he's talking a little bit about history, but it's so clever. You don't even know what he's talking about. And I certainly did not. I didn't know about the backstory and all that in, you know, 95 or whatnot. So, yeah, just to hear it all gel, especially on that track, is kind of ridiculous.
It's super clever. And I love how RZA starts it out where he says, when you don't read the label, you get poisoned. And I love that sort of play on words. And I think if I recall correctly, that when you talked to GZA, when you sat down with him, when you had the interview, he said, when it comes to his rhymes, it comes naturally for his rhymes to have more than one meaning. And this was very right. present on labels.
Right. I mean, everything is a double entendre, you know? I mean, everything has multiple meanings. And like Oliver said, he's switching things to verbs and nouns. And it's so clever, you don't even know he's doing it. He's doing it so swiftly, you know? Mm.
Do you have a sleeper jam off of here? A song that perhaps wasn't necessarily hitting for you back in 95, but over time has grown to become one of your favorites?
Bible, actually. So I was never a big Killer Priest fan. And I always felt that last track was misplaced. Like I wanted more GZA. I wanted maybe another GZA and Ghost verse or something. And that one, even with the beat, it didn't fit for me. And I know they wanted to end the album on this sort of epic scale, but you know, years later, now that I listen to it, it sort of makes sense because it sort of ends up couching all the previous themes and puts a nice little ribbon on it at the end. You know what I mean? On the search, I felt the joy and I heard the first should be last and the last should be first. The basic instructions before leaving knowledge is wisdom. This goes back when I was 12. I loved doing right, but I was trapped in hell. Had mad ideas, sad eyes and tears, years of fears, but yo, my foes couldn't bear. I searched for the truth since my youth and with the church since birth, but it wasn't worth the loot. And this comes back to my egoless point earlier, is that Jizz is not on the song at all. Like, no. This is just a pure Killer Priest right. song that Jizz is like, go ahead, give my man his own cut. I'm going to let him close my own album, and I'm not going to show up on this song at all.
Sure.
Which probably confused a lot of folks, because I'm sure if you were listening to this for the first time, you keep waiting for Jizz to drop in. It's like, yo, what
where's
Jizz? But, you know, how many people do that for another artist on their, you know, within their clique? Just give them an entire song off the album.
Right. And even when I interviewed GZA, he was like, yeah, that was my call. I wanted to put him on. And once I heard it, I felt it was magic. And it was a very purposeful thing, you know, which, again, goes back to your point about just being egoless, but also understanding the gravity of the moment and wanting to end his album properly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for that song, I kept waiting for there to be a hook with a girl. Singing about it, just the way the song is built, I'm waiting for somebody to come in, Mary J, or somebody to come in singing about, you know, basic instructions for leaving Earth, you know. So this is what I'm waiting for, and that song was a little strange to me. The churchy me liked it, but outside of that, I was like, I don't know about that one. It just seemed like something that would be on an R&B album.
Yeah,
that's what I thought too, and especially since the other cuts were so driving, and this one almost has like a Liaz Fair feel to it, but still, I you know, years later, now I keep it on, you know what I mean?
Right. Is GZA the best, the nicest with the verses out of the Wu-Tang, out of the Clan?
Oh, you're going to come with that as a closing question?
My bad. Well, you can put it somewhere else in the interview, but if you had to rank them.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're thinking in terms of pure rhyming, and, you know, he doesn't depend or sort of fall back on any gimmicks, like, you know, like ODB's the wild one, GZA's right. not the wild one. Method is the sex symbol with the sexy voice. GZA's not either. You know, GZA's sort of the quiet scholar genius. So yeah. it works out perfectly, I think.
The thing is, Morgan, I think if you had asked me this question, let's say 10 years ago, I probably would have said, without hesitation, I would have said Ghostface. Mm. And I think partly it's because Ghostface, especially in the 90s, especially off of Supreme Clientele, which I mentioned earlier, I just thought he was so creative. Like, between the voice, the flow, the lyrics, of course, Ghost really, really stood out to me coming off of that particular album. I think with the benefit of time, though, I think GZA, to me, is, if not the clear number one, is at least the arguable number one.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons that you already stated. And I think, you know, there's a reason why he was the head of the Voltron robot, is because he was the most experienced, he was the most senior alongside RZA, and that he just had gravitas, you know, and I think that counts for a lot, especially when you think back over the passage of time.
I read somewhere, and I don't know where it is, maybe Christian can bring it up for him later, that GZA is ranked in terms of highest vocabulary out of all of hip hop or all rappers. He's fourth. And I don't know who one, two, and three are, but damn, you know, I love GZA, and I've said this before on interviews, but I think the award for charisma definitely goes to Meth. I liked what GZA had to say. I liked how Meth said it. I liked all the things to Cal. I like John Blaze. I like, you know, I like these little catchphrases. So I loved his delivery. But what was being said and the science and the history thrown in, to me, that puts GZA at the top.
Yeah. So, Dave, as a writer, this is usually what ties up our other guests who are writers. But if you had to describe Liquid Swords in three words, what would your triplet be?
All right. So I think I would go with cinematic for, you know, obvious reasons, because, I mean, every time we talk about the album, it's like you're watching freeze frames from a film, you know. So that would be one for me. The second would be observational, because I think with him, obviously the album is filled with like so much braggadocio stuff. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like GZA sitting there in the same way like Illmatic is, where he's just painting a picture of his surroundings and what he's sort of seeing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the third word, I'm just going to go with an easy one, but I think it's kind of genius.
I love it. Love it.
Well, that will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, music writer Dave Ma. Dave, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on a couple things. I just did a long piece on Simon Day, and that's going to come out for Wax Poetic soon.
Nice.
I interviewed Gary Newman.
Oh, of Cars fame.
And you know, yeah, that's a little bit outside of my wheelhouse, but he's one of my favorite artists, and I'm gonna pitch that around, kind of see where that goes. And there's a few other things in the pipeline. I just spoke to Cool Keith on the making of Black Elvis, because that's approaching an anniversary soon. And hopefully we'll get this, you know, some other projects underway soon.
And where can people find you online?
You can find me online at waxpoetics.com. Nerdtorious.com is another one. That's just my blog.
Yeah.
Sort of a repository for all my writings and just like random nerdistry stuff. Instagram, Twitter, and also dadbodratpod.com, as well as needletothegroove.net.
Man, you got
gang of locations.
Seriously.
Oh, no. Thank you, though, guys.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, Tim.
If you liked Liquid Swords, Morgan and I have recommendations for other things that you should check out. And I would actually recommend that people go back to that first Genius album, Words from the Genius, from 1991 on Cold Chillin'. I don't know if GZA would want us to recommend this, because I don't know if he's getting residuals off of that album because of the contract that he signed. And the reason I'm recommending Words from the Genius is not because it's a great album, because it really isn't, but I think it's such a fascinating early document of what hip-hop sounded like 91, pre-Wu, And one of the distinguishing things about the album, which does have, it does have some jams on there, and it's partially because the person who does most of the production, I think something like 80% of the tracks, Easy Mo B, pre-Biggie, like all those guys. This was one of his first big, big production gigs, and he does most of the songs on there. In addition to LG, who would later do a little bit of production for Positive K. So, but yeah, if you want to hear early Genius, you know, pre-Woo, and Easy Mo B, pre-Biggie, then I think Words From a Genius is actually a pretty good way to roll.
No, it's a 6-foot drop from stealing rhymes, which is incorrect. Fighting was the cause, death was the effect. Cause the action, affect the reaction. It's more like you, yo, you're just a fraction of those who speak on how others are weak. You want a sneak peek of the hype technique.
My recommendation would be, I mean, maybe this is a little bit obvious, but for those that have never heard this album, because we referenced it a couple of times in this episode, I would suggest that you go back to the original, the founding, the first. Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers, going back to 1993.
Tyga style.
Go all the way back. There's 12 songs, of course, 13 if you include the mix of M-E-T-H-O-D, man. And I would suggest starting with the song that I referenced in there, because you could see the genius, that is GZA. But of course, Cream, you want to hear that, The Mystery of Chess Boxing. There's a great website that ranks Wu-Tang's albums, I think from 1 to 25. This one is number 1, but if you want to go back to all, 1. 2 is Only Built for Cuban Links, which Oliver talked about. 3 is Supreme Clientele, and 4 is Liquid Swords. But if you want to get into some of the stuff that we're saying, the skits, albeit somewhat lengthy, the cinematic quality of these albums, and the genius that is Jizz's lyricism, go back to the very beginning.
He throws the signs, I hook up the beat for clout. I throw the rhymes through the mic and I strike them out. So it really doesn't matter on how you intrigue. You can't fuck with those in the major league. So land in the front, let your feet stomp. Fingers on the left, we're action to death.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles. And before we get up out of here, one last thing, a teaser for next week's episode, which features Los Angeles singer and songwriter Jametta Rose talking to us about the 1974 album Rags to Rufus from Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
What is the gift that you think Chaka has given to singers? What does she do on record that is not just, I mean, it's impressive to me, but I'm not a singer. I'm just a music fan. But what speaks to you as a singer that makes Chaka's voice and her style just so amazingly impressive?
I feel like Chaka was a piercing voice, a voice that shot through. I thought of her voice like a horn. I think of my voice as a horn. Like, I always was too loud. I used to get in trouble for being loud, you know, like, and not because I was speaking so loud, but because my voice pierces and cuts through.
Your singing
and
voice.
Speaking, singing, sure. Whatever. And so the voice that pierces through. And so Chaka pierced through. And then when you followed that light that you found that she was a Black Panther. You found that she was an activist. You found that she was a party girl. You found that. So you found yourself in Chaka. I think that we got a whole lot of honesty from Chaka. And as a person who strives to maintain my own transparency and authenticity in my living, let alone whatever they call this, career or art. You know, I'm just living. I'm breathing. And that's what you got from Chaka. You got, I'm just living and I'm breathing. I'm figuring this out. And I happen to also be able to sing and let y'all party, but I'm going to figure me out too.
Right.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.